In the mid-50s, two men knocked over a kerosene stove during a fight at a concert. After fleeing the blaze, the guitar player realized he left his beloved Gibson inside. B.B. King then ran in and saved it. He later learned that the fight was over a woman named Lucille, and ever since, his guitars have borne that name. You can find Lucille at the Hard Rock in Hollywood, Florida. Thousands of other priceless pieces of rock history can be found at Hard Rock cafes, casinos, and hotels around the world. To learn more, visit hardrock.com.
Little Stephen's Underground Garage's coolest conversations, presented by Hard Rock Cafe, hosted by the Mighty Manfred.
It's time for your coolest conversations, presented by Hard Rock and Little Stephen's Underground Garage. I am the Mighty Manfred. Thanks for listening. Please remember to follow and subscribe, rate, and review. I'll be speaking with New Jersey rocker Bobby Mahoney. He recently signed to Wicked Cool Records and was part of this year's Little Stephen's Underground Garage South by Southwest Showcase. His recent coolest song in the world is Empty Passenger Seats. It's off his upcoming album, Another Deadbeat Summer. We'll hear a tad of a tune now, and then I'll be back with Bobby for your coolest conversations presented by Hard Rock and Little Stephen's Underground Garage. Conversations time here in Little Stephen's Underground Garage. I'm the Mighty Manfred, and I've got New Jersey rocker Bobby Mahoney with me today. He's been rocking out. Yeah, he's been rocking out the Garden State and beyond for over 10 years now. His coolest song in the world is Empty Passenger Seats. It's off the upcoming Wicked Cool Records debut album, Another Deadbeat Summer, that's due out June the 14th. Bobby, how are you?
I'm great. Thanks for having me, Manfred. I appreciate it.
Well, thank you for being here. So, you're from New Jersey. Where in Jersey?
I grew up in East Brunswick, so central. You know, they say Central Jersey doesn't exist, but it does.
Because you were there.
That's right. I grew up there.
Story. So, do you still live there in East Brunswick?
I do. That's where I still live with my wife, and my parents are still in town, and my wife's family's still in town, so it's nice we get to be close to everybody. But musically, I kind of grew up in Asbury Park and New Brunswick, respectively.
Okay, so for folks that aren't as familiar with the geography of the Garden State, how far are you from Asbury Park?
Yeah. I'm about a half an hour, 40 minutes north, up good old Route 18.
Okay, wow. And New Brunswick is literally right adjacent to you.
Yeah, that's our backyard, practically. So, you know, we have an hour to the city, an hour to Philly. You know, we're in a really cool spot to be musically.
So your town that was East Brunswick, that's... Yeah. Put that up, so there's around a population of not quite 50,000. It's, you know, as you mentioned, you're kind of in the middle of everything, so it's kind of a fairly congested overall. But did it feel like growing up in a small town at all?
A little bit more so. Maybe small town's a stretch, but it was definitely a little bit more rural when my family moved there in '99. So it was a little bit more small town feeling then, but like my graduating class in high school was like 800 kids or 900 kids practically. So not really small town really feel for that, but.
So when you graduated high school, was they were just like reading out names and just had you guys jogging across the
state? Yeah, practically. It was at the the arena in Trenton, which has changed names a bunch of times. I forget what it's called right now. I think it was the Sun Bank Arena at the time. And they had this kind of, it was very long, but it was cool to be part of it, you know, and to be able to do that. And then I went to William Patterson for college and studied music there.
Okay, well, let's get to some of this kind of stuff, because first, you mentioned sort of being in this great sort of location for music. Were either your parents musicians?
Neither one were really musicians. My mom sang and tried playing guitar a little bit. My dad, we joke around, helps to carry my guitar sometimes, but, couldn't really carry a tune in a bucket. But they're both big music fans, and they raised me right, getting me into some good music early on. So they were, again, not really musicians, but definitely music fans.
Do you have any siblings?
I do. I have a younger sister, Melanie, who's 5 years younger than me. She's actually a much better singer than I am, but she's studying to become a lawyer right now, so she's the smart one.
So she sings. Have you put her on any recordings?
Not yet. No, she's, anytime she's been in the studio with me, she's kind of like, this is, pretty boring. but at some point, I'd love to get her. My wife's a singer too. My mom sings a bit. So I want to get, I'd love to get everybody on a recording at some point. That'd be really cool.
Well, it sounds like you got like a girl group, backing group there.
That's right. The Mahonettes.
For future recordings. Yeah. If you say it again, Mahonettes.
The Mahonettes. That's it. It writes itself.
Oh, man. Right, man, that's there. Very cool. So you mentioned your parents raising you right music wise. Well, what does that mean? What kind of music was getting played in the home?
Growing up, some of the earliest musical memories were the Grateful Dead. I remember hearing Friend of the Devil and Casey Jones at a very young age. And those, weirdly enough, speaking to me as a fourth grader. But also like Bon Jovi, Springsteen, Neil Young, The Stones, a lot of great classic. Meatloaf. I have very early memories listening to Meatloaf in the car. Warren Zevon. So interesting mix for a kid.
Absolutely.
Into.
Well, so you have this great music going on in the home, in the house. Well, what was is guitar your first instrument?
Technically trombone. I started playing in like the fifth grade, band or whatever. And my grandparents had given me a harmonica too when I was a kid, but really guitar was the first one that I wanted to gravitate to on my own.
Before we get to the guitar, I want to hear about the trombone. So why? Because, I had a cousin once, and he's a fairly big fellow, and he came home one day and he said, oh, the band director said that I'm the perfect, my lips are perfect to blow a tuba. And we all kind of thought, no, you're kind of like a big enough kid to carry a tuba. But
with
the trombone, why were you playing trombone?
Oh, I think they came in and like they introduced us to all the different instruments and were like, here's a trumpet, here's a trombone. And I think I thought at the time, like, oh, that doesn't have buttons. That seems easier. And I was very wrong because, anyone who knows anything about a trombone knows it's all by ear and knows you have to get the position in the right spot to get it by ear. So it's actually very difficult. And it was a little hard. It was one of those things that became homework. So I didn't really practice it. But the guitar never became homework for me. I kind of started playing around the same time and I kind of picked it up myself and mostly taught myself. I had some help with YouTube and some of like my grandfather sat me down with this Canadian guy for like 3 hours in total. And he showed me some stuff when I was like a kid. But other than that, guitar became.
Well, how did that guitar get in your hand?
Well, so my mom, again, not really a musician, had tried to learn guitar in the 70s, House of the Rising Sun, and it didn't really take, but my grandfather hung on to the guitar and would occasionally play Johnny Cash around the house or whatever and pull it out. So then I became interested and was like, hey, pop, do you have that old guitar sitting around still? And he brought it over and showed me how to play Folsom Prison, and that was about it. And now we're sitting here talking to you, so
Well, that's pretty wild. A very cool way to start playing guitar. Can I ask you, how old are you now?
I'm 28. I turned 29 by the time this interview airs, so I'll be 29.
So, you're 20 and you'll be 29. Did you play in any bands in high school?
Yeah, I did a little bit. I started playing, like Battle of the Bands and stuff like that around 13, 14, eighth grade or so. Yeah. You know, I started the first time I ever sang in front of anybody was in like the fifth grade talent show. I sang Wanted Dead or Alive. Okay, and then I started writing songs and things like that. And I really wanted to be a songwriter first and foremost.
Oh.
And then my singing skills at first really weren't up to snuff. And all my friends were kind of like, yeah, maybe you shouldn't sing. So then I kind of got into guitar playing and got into more like, oh, well, you know, I could be a Richie Sambora type, you know, play guitar, sing, you know, whatever. And then we all kind of, my first band we started, we all kind of drew straws and I got stuck singing again. And then, you know, again, that's the rest is history too, because here I am now and I've been working on my singing quite a bit over the last decade or so. So,
well, before we go further, I want to focus on that Wanted Dead or Alive thing because,
yeah.
So you did that at the high school talent show, right?
That was the fifth grade talent show.
Yeah,
this is a while ago.
Show.
I was a little guy.
Time ago,
yeah.
But still, well, I saw looking up stuff about you guys online and that you got to play with Bon Jovi like 4 years ago, 5 years ago. When did that happen?
Yeah, I think it was 6 years ago. Okay. Yeah, yesterday as of this recording. We got to play Prudential Center with them, which was an amazing dream come true. You know, I can't really even still fathom how that, you know, came together and that we got to do that. Yeah, it was amazing.
So the high school you was pretty much complete music wise then.
Oh yeah, no, I could hang it up right now. But it's at the same time though, it's hungrier than ever. So it's kind of that made me kind of like, ooh, I like this. I need to do that again.
Right.
So, you know,
after high school, I think you mentioned going to college. Where was that?
William Patterson in Wayne.
Where is William Patterson?
Wayne, New Jersey. So like North Jersey, about just outside New York, depending on the day. I'd say half an hour to an hour outside the city, depending on traffic. But yeah, North Jersey.
And so you studied music there?
Yeah, I studied, composition, songwriting, as well as music business, performance, recording arts. It was a good mix. It was a really cool program. It was called Popular Music Studies. And I always just tell people I majored in Beyonce. But it it was pretty practical. And in terms of being helpful to me, it was great because actually I'm sitting here doing this interview. I teach at a private school. I teach music during the day when I'm not, you know, rocking and playing, you know, either basements or arenas or clubs or wherever you have us. So going to school and learning about the business end of stuff has been very helpful in terms of just networking too. Things like that Bon Jovi gig probably wouldn't have happened for networking opportunities that came from that, but also just then having a, you know, degree to be able to then turn around and teach music has been helpful to help keep the lights on.
As a teacher, what are you teaching?
Mostly music, as anywhere from just like kind of guitar lessons to drums, okay, keyboards, songwriting, recording arts. You know, it totally depends on the student.
And so you do. So you play drums as well?
A little bit. My drummer would probably argue that. James would be like, I don't know about if Bobby you play drums. I can explain.
Well, that's
kind of
dangerous.
Show a student.
That's dangerous. When a drummer walks in and the guitar player's like, yeah, well, see, I've got this idea for your drum part here.
Uh huh. Well, yeah. He's very gracious with me, and that. Yeah. So I'll kind of be like, here's what I had in mind, but like, can you give me a real drum part? And then James would be like, yeah, I want to hold my beer, and he'll, you know, come up, make my part that much better.
So when we talk about him, is this, he's part of the Seventh Son.
Yeah. So, James.
Tell me about like, when did the Seventh Son begin? Bobby Mahoney, okay, so, Seventh Son.
So just so it's, you asked. So it's, so a little bit of Seventh Son just as itself. Started as a high school group with myself, my friend John Alba, and Drew Aggie. We were just kind of, high school basement garage band. And then at the same time, on a parallel track, I was playing solo acoustic in Asbury Park starting around 15. I was the first time I played the Stone Pony when I was 15.
Wow.
And I started kind of building up a name for myself in town as this like young solo acoustic guy. And then I went off to school and some of the other guys went off to college and we kind of reformed the band when I was at William Patterson. And at that point, kind of for marketing, we kind of made it Bobby Mahoney and the Seventh Son. Because I have a affinity for the tradition of long band names, you know, and having the band and the singer have kind of separate but together identities, you know.
Yeah.
Bruce Springsteen, the E Street Band, you know, George Thorogood, the Destroyers, what have you, you know.
Yeah.
Huey Lewis in the News. But then we ran with that since 2014, so it's been 10 years. And now with you know, with this new record and everything, we're kind of taking the opportunity to, because even, you know, people ask my drummer at a gig, oh, who are you playing with? Bobby Mahoney and the Seventh Son. By the time the third time around, it's a lot to say, and people don't usually get it anyway. So we're kind of now just going with Bobby Mahoney as the name of the project and the band. I'm kind of hoping for it to be like a Lynyrd Skynyrd type scenario where I kind of end up don't existing, or just like an entity. But yeah, so we're kind of rolling with Bobby Mahoney now as the
right. Well, but you know, I got two right there. It's Graham Park and the Rumor and Elvis Costello and the Attraction. So
yeah,
everybody knew what the backing band was, but they weren't always listed on the name of the on the record, you know.
Yeah, so that's kind of where we're at right now. It's kind of that transitional period where I love having And the Seventh Son because to me it ties me to my roots. I know it's like a biblical reference and the old, you know, blues reference in the Johnny Rivers song, but we originally got it from AC/DC's Bad Boy Boogie. And I'm a big AC/DC fan, and when we started Seventh Son, John Alba and I took a lot of influence from the Angus and Malcolm, and that still carries into our sound today. I like to say we're a mix of like AC/DC, Springsteen, Green Day, you know, Against Me, you know, more of the punk elements as well.
You know, I want us to get to Empty Passenger Seats, our coolest song of the week. But I wanted to kind of get this timeline straight because I listened to the upcoming album, Another Deadbeat Summer, and I recognized afterwards, checking out like your Bandcamp page, a lot of these songs, a number of these songs are also on other releases. So first, I want you to explain how you wound up on Wicked Cool. And then secondly, we'll talk about what the idea for this album is, Another Deadbeat Summer. So first, how'd you wind up on Wicked Cool?
So I'm still wrapping my head around that myself. I'm still pinching myself. But part of it is, I suppose, Steven heard our songs, Another Deadbeat Summer, some really close friends of mine, and, you know, got our music to him and he's heard it. Mm-hmm. And again, all that, I'm still a little like, you know, don't exactly know how, but, you know, and he started hearing our stuff, and I guess it was like, hey, we should sign these guys. And the songs that they were into, of that we had written or had put out, they liked the songs we did on our last two EPs.
Right.
So then again, I don't know whose idea it was. It could have been mine, could have been Steven's, I'm not sure, but someone, or Dennis, someone's idea was to pretty much take the last two EPs plus another single that we had released and put it, remix it all. Like Jeff Sanoff remixed the whole thing from the bottom up, and Joe Lambert remastered it all. And it is a new record. It sounds great. And it's for the fans who have heard those songs over the last, in some cases, 10 years.
Yeah.
It's, I think it's the best they've sounded and like the clearest representation of what the song should be.
Right.
While also for the overwhelming majority of people, it'll be their first time hearing us and, you know, being introduced to what we do. And I think it's a really good representation of where we are right now musically. And I'm excited to get this out and to show the world. And I'm excited to keep working on the other new songs we've been writing, because it's we got a lot in the tank. So we're just excited to hit the ground running.
All right. Well, let's talk about our coolest song in the world this week then, Empty Passenger Seats. So when was it recorded, for instance? When did you first get it down?
That was originally recorded in 2017 in Clifton, New Jersey, at a place called North End Recording. Shout out to cousin Frank there, who recorded it. It's a great spot, and we tracked a bunch of the tunes there. The song originally started was when we were driving home, one of our first sort of you know, band tours or trips, or we're still self-booking everything at this point.
Right.
We're currently. So even then, this is our first time really doing that. And we had played we did like a week of shows, and we played Richmond, Virginia. We played like a literal shed in Richmond, Virginia, and it was about 110 degrees. And then we drove home overnight back to New Jersey, and coming up the turnpike, you know, while the sun was rising, I kind of got this feeling of like comfortability in that, like, what we're doing is insane, and like, you know, but it's also felt really like we're doing what we should be doing. Yeah. And then the riff came together, myself and our friend Dan Cohen, who's in a great band called Creating Clementine, honed the riff a little bit, and then the band and I worked on the song in various Motel 6s across the eastern part of the country for a while, and then we, you know, recorded it. And I love that the song kind of has that road feeling and also yeah. like the history behind it for us. I remember listening to an early mix of it in Georgia, and we were all kind of like, it was one of those, like, you put it on, you're so excited to hear it. And then it wasn't exactly what we had envisioned yet. And we were all kind of like, oh, you know, so when we got to listen to the new mixes again, we were kind of at that moment of like, ah, and we were like, oh, cool. We're there, you know? Yeah. And that's with the older versions of the songs, our pals who worked on it, whether it was Frank, Tim, Joe, Doug, they all did a really great job on the songs. And like, I was kind of kicking and screaming about remixing things a little bit. Cause I was like, well, we did it. We nailed it. Yeah. But in terms of this great opportunity and getting, you know, having our stuff to be put out on Wicked Cool Records, you know, it was an amazing opportunity. And I'm so thrilled that we did it, because the songs sound great and I'm really proud of where they are. And I think I've been saying it's a great cap to the last 10 years and a great start to the next 10.
Oh, that's well put. So think about songwriting here. So you are the principal songwriter, right?
Yeah.
And so how do you go about this? Do you actually demo things out and play those for the other guys, or you kind of present fragments or a sketch of the song and they fill things out? How do you typically come together?
A little bit of both of those, kind of a combination of that. Sometimes it'll be just like a voice memo with myself in an acoustic guitar. And I'll then be like, but I'll hear it in my head and be like, well, the drums are doing this, the bass is doing this kind of thing. But, you know, here are the changes and what do you guys think? You know, sometimes I'll have like a more fleshed out demo where I'll badly play drums, you know, that kind of thing. And like, you know, be like, here's a rough sketch of what I kind of equate it to writing like an outline in, like, if you're writing a research paper, you know, kind of thing, where it's like you're writing it out in the bullet points and, you know, here's where this thing will go. I don't know exactly what it'll be yet. You know, Andrew, the guitar, you know, you'll come up with a solo for that or like a melody there or whatever. And, you know, but usually I like to leave some room for the band to do their thing, because, like, you know, what's great about working with musicians who are, you know, just as good, if not, you know, in their own ways, a lot better at what they do than what I can do in their, were those parts, like letting Andrew come up with the guitar part. I'd be silly to not, or I'd be silly to not let James come up with the drum part, or have, you know, John Cheng Soon work on the bass line. Cause again, they're going to come up, might hear stuff that I don't. That said, if they play something that I don't think fits the vision of the song, I'll be like, well, maybe not that idea, you know, but I try to be open-minded to not being like, no, this is the song. And, you know, and sometimes that, you know, sometimes you need that, like, here it is, the whole thing. And we just, all we have to do is play it. And the band kind of likes that sometimes too, because it's, you know, if they like the part, they're not going to argue with it or anything like that.
Right.
But they're super helpful. And a lot of times they help me weed out the less good ideas and help me, you know, if I think an idea is less good, they might go, oh, no, it's that thing. You don't hear it yet, but it's, you know, so it's very collaborative. And between, you know, guys who are in the band currently and guys who have been in the band previously, like I mentioned, John Alba and Dan Cohen, like those guys haven't been in the band in years, but they're still, you know, writing with me occasionally and helping me, you know, bounce ideas off of each other and just like showing them like, hey, what do you think of this mix? And they'll go, no, that's terrible. You know, I'll go, thank you. You know, so yeah, I have a lot of help around me. I have a good team of people and I'm very thankful for each and every one of them.
Well, and so you mentioned that early gig playing, and when you were describing empty passenger seats, having played a gig in a shed in Richmond, Virginia, and talking about, you know, how you're still booking things yourselves. Well, recently you played as part of this Little Stevens Underground Garage Presents event at the Continental Club last month in March for South by Southwest. How was that?
That was pretty amazing, honestly. That was really cool. I didn't have that on our bingo card for this year. But
Have you ever played South by Southwest before?
No, I had never even been to Texas prior. So it was like a big, like, okay, we're going. It was awesome. Dennis, the label, you know, a couple weeks or a couple months before, whatever.
Yeah, you mentioned Dennis before. So let's tell people who is Dennis.
So Dennis helps run the label. He's the label manager. Cool. He's the stage Wicked Cool. Yeah. He's also, shout out Dennis. He's awesome. So he was like, if we set this thing up, you know, would you be interested? And like, you know, without thinking, without talking to the band, without talking to my wife, without talking to anybody. I'm like, yeah, of course. Like, yeah, we'll get there. It's just, you know, let me know where we're playing. And of course, everyone was just as thrilled and excited as I was. So that was not a problem, luckily.
Were there any other gigs that you did down there or on the way or back?
Yeah. So, well, we got, we had like the big, obviously the Continental, like you mentioned, was the big one, but we ended up playing the Carousel Lounge.
Oh,
the day before.
Yeah, that's fun. Yeah.
And then shout out to Adam Wiener from Low Cut Connie, because he actually suggested that place to us. He's like, that's the coolest bar in Austin. You got to go play there. So we did that. And then we did Leanne Anderton had Anderton. Forgive me for the last name pronunciation. But she has this barn dance that becomes like a big South by like sort of end party every year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And we played that end party with the Cocktail Slippers. And that was a lot of fun to play. It's like sort of outdoor barn, you know, send off party kind of thing. So that was great. And then we flew home. So it was
you weren't born in a barn,
weekend.
But you've played one.
Oh, yeah, yeah, that's right. We've, like I said, barns, sheds, attics, basements, clubs, arenas. We'll take them.
Right. Well, do you have any upcoming gigs in barns, sheds, arenas, basements?
We're playing. We're working on these bigger CD release show or record release shows for the summer. But to tide us over between now and then, May 4th, we're going to be playing a really cool show at the surf bar in Asbury Park called Low Dive. Right on the boardwalk, we're playing like a free after party show for the Sum 41 summer stage show. So the Sum 41 is playing the big Stone Pony summer stage. Uh-huh. And then when their time curfew hits, I think around, you know, 10:30, we'll start playing across the street and keep the party going there. So that's Low Dive in Asbury Park on May 4th.
Excellent.
May the 4th be with you.
And we're going to go out with a track off the upcoming album, the title track. It's another Deadbeat Summer. Again, the album's due out Friday, June the 14th. And thinking about summers, is there one particular summer that stands out in your memory, like is the best or most fun?
Well, I would say this summer 2022, I got married. So that was a really great summer. Just from, you know, the trips and the, yeah, no, yeah. Brownie points for that answer. So that one definitely... there was a summer where the first time the band went to Canada, and that sticks out as like a, again, like kind of like a formative memory kind of thing.
Yeah.
And we went up and played Niagara Falls in Toronto as a group for the first time like that. I don't know. I've had a lot of really good summers, and frankly, I mean, you know, they blend together eventually, but that's why I love having Andrew around. Is Andrew, I'll be like, yeah, when did we play that gig? Was great. What was that? He's like, oh yeah, that was summer 2018. We played this place, and you know, these bands played, and he'll remember everything.
Well, you know what's good about this is I tell you, as time goes on, it's a band brain, collective brain.
Yeah.
So Andrew's getting it right now, but you'll be surprised a little bit. You know, he'll say something and go, no, that's, you know, I don't think that was it. And then you had to sort of kind of refocus. Oh, yeah. You know, it's collective.
That makes sense.
Brain.
Yeah, I like that. And honestly, I think the another answer I could have gone with, I think this summer might be the best summer I've ever had. Just thinking forward, you know.
Right.
If you told me that I was going to be, you know, releasing a record with Little Stevens, Wicked Cool Records, I'm not sure I would have believed you at the top, you know, and so it's pretty amazing that thankful for the opportunity.
This summer coming, obviously not another Deadbeat Summer.
No.
What motivated you to write about a Deadbeat Summer?
Well, that title phrase, I think my friends, they were in high school, they threw this big party. That was like one of those, you know, high school movie thing, like, you know, parents are away for the weekend, they have, you know, they throw the party, they have to try to get the house back together. And I think they sort of like the home movie that they made of it was called The Deadbeat Summer. And I think I took that and was just like, all right, we're, you know, and then I remember starting to write the song in my dorm room at William Patterson in 2014 or so, 2013, 2014. And that, you know, sort of that imagery, that whole song is really just about that party and that weekend and sort of the shenanigans that went on. But that became sort of the first song at our shows that people kind of sang along with us. And, you know, we've recorded that even before this version remix is another whole recording of this song from our record back then. So the song has really been a really special part of our shows and a part of our history. And again, it was one of the, I could be wrong, but I think it was the one that Steven heard of from us that he was most interested in originally. Uh-huh. So it just made sense to kind of go with that as the title track and the vibe. And, you know, in a way, this album is kind of almost like a, without sounding too pretentious or anything, a little bit of a greatest hits for us, because, like, you know, all these songs we've been playing for a while, and a lot of people who have been enjoying us like the tunes. So it's kind of like, well, that's sort of the hit of all the hits for us. So let's make that the title track and let's roll with it.
Well, Bobby, thank you again for chatting with me today on Our Coolest Conversations.
Thanks for having me, Manfred. I really appreciate it. This is great.
Yeah, absolutely, man. Looking forward to hearing the having the album out. Again, another Deadbeat Summer comes out on Wicked Cool Records Friday, June the 14th. Going to take a listen to the title track, Bobby Mahoney, Another Deadbeat Summer, and Little Steven's Underground Garage. Portion of the title song to his upcoming album Another Deadbeat Summer. That was Bobby Mahoney here in Little Steven's Underground Garage. Album's due out Friday, June the 14th on Wicked Cool Records. I'm the Mighty Manfred, and thanks again to Bobby for joining me today on Our Coolest Conversations. Thanks also to Sammy Semenza for producing our podcast. Rochester, New York's garage rock revivalist, the Chesterfield Kings. They were active originally 1979 to 2009, some 30 years, and now, after a 15-year hiatus, they're back with new music. Their latest single is Electrify, and it is also on Wicked Cool Records. These days, they are funded by Andy Babiuk on guitar and lead vocals, and he'll be my guest next time around on Our Coolest Conversations, presented by Hard Rock in Little Steven's Underground Garage.
Buddy, you're a boy. Make a big noise playing in the street. I'm gonna be a big man someday. You got mud on your face, you big disgrace. Kicking your can all over the place.
Some things are better when they rock. The Seminole Hard Rock Hotels and Casinos rock around the clock with nonstop casino action, rooms fit for the king, pools, spas, restaurants, and clubs for every taste and temptation. Seminole Hard Rock Hotel and Casino in Tampa or Hollywood, Florida. We will rock you.